Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Dara Zeledon. Also known as the Warrior Mom, Dara writes a blog that offers a unique voice of experiential and academic knowledge of social sciences. Her empowering messages comes from the appreciation and passion for life, dealing with the daily chaotic tug of war between motherhood and personal self. She is a featured writer and contributor to several print and online parenting and family magazines. Dara and I will be discussing about her life's journey and her seven universal pearls of wisdom. Good morning, Dara. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Fantastic. I hope you and your family had a wonderful 4th of July weekend.
We did. We went and barbecued with some friends. We tired out the little herd of five that I have with a lot of swimming, and then we brought them home, and they passed out in the car. So that was the easiest part. The nighttime work was pretty slow.
Wonderful. I mean, that's the way to do it. Tire them out, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Oh, well, let's see. I grew up in South Florida. I had three brothers growing up, and I grew up in a pretty middle-class Jewish family with your typical neuroses, as you would say. Was really into sports. I used to always hang out with my dad and my brothers and play sports, so I would say I was probably a tomboy growing up. And back in those days in the 70s, you just had a lot more freedom than kids do today. I remember riding my bike all over town without a helmet. My parents didn't know where I was. There were no cell phones. They'd just say, be back for dinner. It was just a different world back then. But we had a lot of fun. We had a big family, and we had the party house. So I think we always had friends and family coming over for barbecues, a pool time. I have several musicians in my family, so someone would always be strumming a guitar or playing the drums or pretending to sing. So we had a good time, and I had a pretty good childhood. I can't complain about that. And I guess after college, I got the travel bug. And I studied psychology, and I wanted to just explore other cultures, explore other terrains. My parents hadn't been much international travelers themselves, so being the rebellious spirit that I was, I said, well, I want to do something different. So I did a lot of traveling, and I always somehow justified it with some sort of a grant or a scholarship or a loan so I could be doing quote-unquote research. But, yeah, that was what I was going. That was the premise. But I always really wanted to just backpack and learn about the other cultures. And lo and behold, when I did become an adult, all this adventuring and exploring led me to marry a man that took me to Costa Rica to begin my life as a wife and as a mother. So I guess my fate caught up with me, and I've lived most of my adult life between Costa Rica, Panama, and Israel. And now I'm back here in the States just 2 short years.
Fantastic. What are some of your favorite childhood memories?
Really, if you know, you think about it, and as parents today, we always think that we have to wow our children with fancy vacations or wonderful toys or crazy parties with all of their friends. But if I think about it, my favorite memories are being at home, hosting one of our Sunday evening barbecues, all the neurotic, dysfunctional aunts, uncles, everybody coming over. But, you know, it was safe, it was secure, it was predictable. We knew who was coming. We knew what we were going to eat, everyone playing in the pool, everyone, you know, listening to my uncle strum the guitar. And that's really what most resonates about my childhood are those Sundays. those Sunday evenings together.
How interesting. When did the Warrior Mom come into the picture?
Well, I think that maybe just as I started engaging with this whole feisty, hot feet, wanting to travel, wanting to explore, I guess my personality developed more as wanting to take calculated risks. I had a very high tolerance for risk. Nothing dangerous, but I wanted to push the envelope a little bit, whether I was learning or whether I was traveling or whatever I was doing, 110%. And the Warrior Mom was a nickname, Johnny, that was given to me by friends when we were living in Panama back in 2006. I was diagnosed with a huge brain tumor while I was pregnant with my fourth child. And what happened was the day I was diagnosed, I came back from that doctor's visit, and I had a crew of 15 men with my whole house in boxes waiting for me to come back and give the go-ahead to go ahead and move. We were moving to another house. So I was so busy with the move and the logistics and coordinating everything with the children that I just kind of separated myself from my own fate and my diagnosis and focused on the task at hand, focused on making sure the children's transition was smooth, getting them set up in the new house. And my friends were coming over simultaneously, crying, bringing me gifts, bringing me newspapers, offering help, and they said, what's with you? You're like the stoic robot, and you're like a warrior. And it just kind of came about that way because, thank God, I had something to take my mind off myself. So I was able to get through something that could have really been potentially detrimental to my mental health, dealing with the diagnosis. And not having the luxury to kind of shrivel up and perish and feel sorry for yourself.
Very interesting.
So that's sort of how it came about. And then, you know, over the years, other issues that I've had and tragedies and adversities, it just kind of stuck because I guess that became my MO. Every time I had to deal with some sort of tragedy, I had some frivolous event that was distracting me from the important thing. But, you know, in hindsight, I realized that's the best thing that can ever happen, not just to me, but I think to anybody that's going through a rough time, that they have a project that will pull them out of themselves and not allow them to really sink into some sort of a depression.
How interesting. The reason why I asked you about the Warrior Mom, I mean, I understand that every day it's a challenge in some ways, whether you are a mom or anyone for that matter. But during those challenging times for you in terms of having cancer and so forth, the Warrior Mom kind of get your mindset into a different level of focus. And, of course, that will to fight. That's very, very interesting. Where do you draw your parenting skills from?
Well, based on what you just said, Johnny, which is very interesting, which is true, which you said it much more eloquently than I did, is I did get myself in that mindset to fight, to battle, to survive, and not let anything bring me down. And my parenting skills are somewhat born from that fighter mentality, because it's a resolve to survive, to just handle your business, to keep going, plowing through the uncertainty. And a lot of times with my children, I'm not one to read a lot of parenting manuals. I'm not one to try to educate myself with the latest trendy academic findings about parenting two-year-olds or preteens or tweens. I kind of parent intuitively. I think I have enough formal education, enough world experience, and a good insight to allow the right answer at the right moment to come to me. Maybe you can say a little bit of a faith that I know that timing is everything. When my child's going to ask me a question, I take a deep breath, I pause, and somehow mm-hmm. the answer comes clearly into my mind. But I'd say as a parent, it's more of what they call nowadays a free-range parenting style. I know which battles are important to fight, and I don't fight a lot of them. I know when to freak out. I know when not to freak out.
Yeah.
And I give my children, I try to teach them a lot of tools to help them become more independent, more self-sufficient, and more confident as they grow up. So I don't tell them the answers to everything. I tell them where to find the answers. I tell them to think about things. I challenge them to analyze things. And I talk to them like I'm talking to you, like an adult, and I tell them things straight, obviously in an age-appropriate way, but I'm not trying to make the world perfect for them or to make sure every moment of their life is a happy one. I want them mm-hmm. to be aware that life is not fair sometimes, but it's how we approach that is what matters and makes us who we are.
Having said that, did you draw any sort of skills from your experience growing up with your mom and perhaps maybe grandparents and so forth?
You know, it's funny that you say that because I don't know. I think I had a very, I had a really good childhood. I was not mm-hmm. an easy child. And mm-hmm. I think that, I don't know if a Chinese proverb or some proverb says that the feistier the child, the more successful the adult. I know I was a difficult child, but my parents gave me a lot of freedom to make the right decisions. And because they weren't hovering over me all the time, I wanted to prove to them that I could do the right thing. So I was mm-hmm. always a very good student. And even though I got into my fair share of mischief, I always brought home those straight A's. So they really couldn't complain too much that mm-hmm. anything I was doing was affecting my responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, growing up in the 70s, it was a different era back then. Parents in general, at least mine, were not so on top of us and so neurotic. So I think, yes, it did affect somewhat my parenting style today because now that we've moved back to the States
mm-hmm.
2 years ago, most of my parenting experience has been in Latin America, which is a whole other country, a whole culture with its own idiosyncrasies. A lot of people have live and help. It's very affordable.
Mm-hmm.
People lead very balanced lives. You don't have the rushing and the craziness that you have here in the U.S. where women have to wear 10 hats and do everything
mm-hmm.
themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So when I moved back here to the States and I was getting involved with writing and for parenting publications, I couldn't believe some of the stuff I was reading about
mm-hmm.
how these parents are hovering over their children and they think that they're making their life so easy, but they're disabling them and not allowing them to develop the skills they need to survive
mm-hmm.
when they get older. So that's where I found that I had a real problem with the prevailing culture, let's say. My kids, when we first moved here, I let them play outside a lot.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't wander into the street, but I had neighbors coming at all hours of the day knocking on the door afraid that they might go into the street. I was just inside the house a few
right.
feet away. But, you know, it took some getting adjusted to the different mentality.
Environment creates a different set of mindset, so to speak, being a parent, though, because I remember growing up even in Malaysia at that time, this was years ago, that yes, you're right, I have the opportunity to sort of travel around my neighborhood. I remember when I was like 6-7 years old, I was already about a mile and a half away from home, and that was not a big thing because come dinner time, guess what, I'm home.
Right, your stomach sends you home.
Right, but in United States, however, depending on which neighborhood that you live in, that changes the dynamics a little bit. So I think parenting skills also change according to the environment you live. So you brought up a very interesting point. You were born and raised, of course, here in the United States. And what's interesting, all your children were born overseas. How has that dynamics helped you in your parenting perspectives?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I have a really great appreciation and admiration for mothers here that do everything themselves,
mm-hmm.
and whether they work inside the home, outside the home, and they take care of their kids, and they keep the house, and you
mm-hmm.
know, cooking, cleaning, laundry, whatever it is. Because when I first moved here, Johnny, I must have dropped 10 pounds, and I'm a thin woman to begin with, just
mm-hmm.
from the stress of trying to chase after all my kids. Three were still toddlers at the time, so I had
mm-hmm.
three in diapers. And I just kept saying to everyone I met, how do you manage a shower a day? How do you even get yourself, how do you brush your teeth? I mean, how do you do anything? Because from the minute you're waking up, you have kids, you know, pulling on you, and I want this,
mm-hmm.
and I need that, and this and that. So right off the bat, I said, I can't believe how did these parents do it, because I was spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
I had my kids in Latin America, and although I wasn't living in, you know, a royalty, or I wasn't in a mansion, it's very affordable to have live-in help. It's very common. You don't have to have a lot of money to have a live-in housekeeper. But
mm-hmm.
and that really took a lot of pressure off of me. I didn't realize until I came here and I saw that I was up until 1 o'clock in the morning mopping the floor. I never had to do that before. So that,
mm-hmm.
that at first was very difficult because I wasn't sleeping and I didn't have enough patience for my children, because when you're not sleeping and you're constantly overworked and overstressed, it doesn't really positively affect your parenting skills.
That's true, very true.
You know, and the kids also had to adapt a lot. You know, I had to teach them very quickly that there's no nannies here, nobody's helping but me, and everybody immediately had to get on a schedule with picking up after themselves, and it's, even the little ones that were just learning how to walk had to do their fair share. So we had to teach them a lot more skills in terms
mm-hmm.
of becoming more self-sufficient and not asking mom for everything.
When did you discover you like to write?
Probably when we came back to the States, which was the result of a whole slew of events that happened, where I'd like to joke and say the kickoff was the brain tumor, and then in between then and coming back to the States, we had a lot of unfortunate things happen in my family that was just like a tsunami of events pounding, and it was amazing that I didn't have a nervous breakdown. I still may, though. But when we came back to the States, my husband one day said to me, he says, you always like to write, and I see you're writing on the back of the bank statements. You're writing on the kids' field trip permission forms for school. You're writing on my documents. He says, let me open up this blogger for you. It's free. And here you can write down all the things you want, and you don't have to take any more paper and lose any more of my pens. And, you know, he thought that he was
mm-hmm.
just kind of getting me out of his hair.
Mm-hmm.
So when he opened up the website for me, that's the Warrior Mom website that I have, that's when I began officially writing and organizing. And it was just a wonderful way to document everything that had happened to us
mm-hmm.
since I got sick. And just a way to kind of sort out what was happening and the changes that we were undergoing with the culture and
mm-hmm.
my children. I had to teach them English. They didn't even speak English hardly, and I had to throw them in the school system and catch up with everything academically. So it was just a great way to vent and to organize my thoughts and have a little project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was for me, and not just, you know, being a 24/7 mom and housekeeper.
So that became an opportunity for you to basically to de-stress yourself by writing, correct?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I've always relied on exercise because I've always been very athletic since I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
But as physical as I am, I'm also a very philosophical person. Hence, I studied psychology and I worked in the psychological field many years. Although I didn't find it was for me to be a therapist, I always enjoyed learning about the philosophies behind everything and how things work and sociology. So it was just a great balance to be able to have a little bit of exercise and a little bit of intellectual endeavor to kind of balance out all the hard work I was doing with getting the children assimilated into American society.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some of the topics that you write on?
Well, really, my kids give me the fodder for much of my pieces. A lot of my work is observational humor, something someone once said, like a Seinfeld, to make a big deal out of nothing, but something that a lot of parents can relate to, whether it's sibling rivalry or, you know, just the difference between the boys and girls in terms of their hygiene. But I write a lot about the kids, and then I lately have been writing a lot about my journey as a woman and discovering myself and my passions independent of being a mother, because the kids one day are going to grow up and fly the coop, and then, you know, when you're left with yourself, you need to know what it is that you like to do, what it is that interests you. So a lot of the writing started off with parenting, but then I started realizing a lot of mothers want to read about discovering themselves and learning to hone in on what it is that they like to do, because they know that as the children start school, they need to find ways to occupy their time. No one wants to be home doing housework all day long.
You have several thousand followers on your various blogging sites, and based on the articles you have written, what kind of feedback have you received from your various articles?
Well, I'd say a lot of people have told me, and this is, you know, I'd say I'm still a new writer. I've got about two years, and I know it takes writers many, many years to really discover that voice. But since the beginning, people have been likening my style to Irma Bombeck, because I always try, even if it kills me, I always try to put a little bit of humor into everything I write, because if we can't laugh about the chaos and the stress and everything else going on, I mean, we're gonna give ourselves a heart attack. And the truth is that when we look back a few years later on that time that, you know, one of our children soiled their suit right before they had to walk in a wedding or whatever it is that caused the stress at the time, it's funny. And if you can laugh about it at the time, you can save yourself a lot of heartache. So I always throw a little bit of humor in, and I notice that it breaks down barriers. So most of my articles have a life lesson, some sort of core central message. So when you can break down barriers with humor, people are more receptive to listening to your message. So I wouldn't say I'm as clean-cut as Irma Bombeck. I might have a little bit of a Joan Rivers flair every now and then. But a lot of my followers say that I write from the heart. I write about real-life stuff. I'm not trying to impress people with fancy words or fancy prose. I'm just writing about things that happen on a day-to-day basis, on the journey of motherhood or journey of discovering your womanhood, if you will. And people can relate, because I'll bring up topics that might not be talked about that often. Mm-hmm. And my husband might not say this is a benefit, but I think it is. I have this ability to sort of detach from the picture, from the situation I'm in. I could be sitting and playing with my kids. It's very strange. It might be labeled a psychiatric disorder in a few years, but for now I'm gonna use it to my benefit. I can kind of detach from the big picture and sort of hover over the scene and get some insight into what's happening and sort of exist on these two parallel tracks, and that's how I do a lot of my writing. I kind of pull myself out of a situation, even though I'm in it, and then I can write about it from sort of an outsider's perspective. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, Johnny.
Sure. Let me answer this. Can you give us one particular topic which is not necessarily mainstream, but a little bit of a controversial way? A lot of parents don't know how to handle it and get to the core of the issue in relating it to their children. But you address those issues, and that's one of the reasons why people follow your blog and as well as your articles in the various parenting magazines. Give us one example about that.
About a topic in particular?
Yes.
Well, I've had an interesting interaction with my 10-year-old daughter a few weeks ago, the topic about sex. She had been asking me, obviously all parents eventually have to discuss sex and how babies are made with their children. And they were learning in school, they were having this county-sponsored AIDS and human sexuality talk. And I wasn't quite sure what they were going to cover, but they sent home permission forms and told me that it was parent approved and blah, blah, blah. So I kept thinking to myself for a few days, I got to get some words in before they hear it at school, but I wasn't quite sure how to do it. And this is where I like to say, I don't read parenting texts and I don't prepare. I just kind of trust in the moment. And one day I was in the kitchen, and one of the things I like to do is buy one of those 15, 20-pound watermelons and slice it up. I don't know. That gives me a lot of pleasure. So I was slicing it up, and I was about 45 minutes doing that. My daughter came in. She kind of gave me this opening, and it just started. And I started explaining to her in a way that she would understand how babies are made, because she had been sort of hinting over the months, and but how does the seed get in there, and, you know, questioning, and my vague answers weren't really satisfying her. And what was great about that, Johnny, was that I could not make eye contact with her because I had a huge knife in my hand. And I knew that I had to focus on that watermelon, but at the same time, it was great because if I was looking her in the eye, she would have gotten so embarrassed that she would have probably not wanted to continue the conversation. So I discussed that with her, and I was able to be very nonchalant and talked about it with her and sort of segued into inappropriate touch and you know, because kids need to learn those things and trust, issues like that. I know it's a topic that a lot of parents maybe are uncomfortable. They don't know how to approach, but it's such a personal one. You have to know your kid. You have to know the timing has to be right. And you really can't just read a parenting manual to figure out how to do it. You have to sort of trust your own intuition as a parent and know when the time is right. And another time I had a very shocking experience with a son of mine who was going through a very rough temper tantrum all day long. He's the exact middle child. He's number 3 out of the 5. And he's brilliant, he's athletic, he's got everything going for him, and he's got a very strong alpha dog personality. And I have to be very firm with him. And at the end of the day, he was so strung out from just misbehaving and crying and his fits that I finally said to him, you know what, you need to ask God to help you overcome this inclination to hurt your brother or to be mean to your sister. You have to ask God for help. And we had this whole conversation, and we're not a religious family. I regret to say we don't even go to religious services every weekend, but I know when it's time to just turn it over to the heavens and say, help me. And I taught him how to do that. And I tell you, this kid has turned around because every night I hear him in bed, please, God, help me hold my hands back when I want to rip the toy out of my brother's hand. Help me, help me. And it's calmed him down because he feels like he has a partner now, someone that's going to help him do the right thing. So I wrote about that, but I wasn't preaching one particular religious point of view. It's mostly teaching kids, again, the skills. Now, you mentioned controversial, correct?
Right, yeah.
Well, one of the articles I wrote was after there was a murder here in Miami, there were two twin foster children, and one of the twins was murdered by the parents, and it was a shocking story all over here. The mother, the foster mother, had worked at a pediatric clinic herself, and everybody was just in an uproar and couldn't believe it at the time the Casey Anthony trial was starting. And I wrote an article called The Darker Side of Parenting because I've studied psychology, and I found myself enraged before. I mean, when we're all under pressure, we can get enraged. And I wrote an article in a very scientific way just saying, hey, you know, what makes these people different than us? I'm not talking about the serial sociopath. I'm talking about someone that is a good parent for the most part, but snaps and does something wrong in the wrong moment and doesn't know when it's time to turn around and walk away. So I got a lot of backlash for that. I wasn't, again, promoting one side or the other. I was just presenting the information to say, hey, do you have the tools if you find yourself enraged one day? Because chances are you're going to be enraged one day. Something's going to push you over the edge, and you're going to need to know when to walk away.
Very true. One of my moms always tells me, even for myself, not necessarily from a parenting perspective, always walk away, chill out, and then come back to the situation. And that's, again, you are approaching things from an unconditional love perspective, because get yourself centered and then come back and take some time out to kind of refocus and get yourself back into the correct mindset of thinking. Parenting is basically very challenging, but yet very rewarding. How can that exist at the same time?
I'm still trying to figure that out. It's funny because as you say that, I remember something someone said to me yesterday. We were at the pool and a neighbor said to me, I asked the neighbor who has a 30-year-old daughter who's traveling all over Europe, and of course I love to hear these stories because that was me before I got married. So I said, oh, how is she doing your with her wanderlust, and is she going to get married? She said, no, she never wants kids. She says, kids suck the life out of you. So I started laughing, and I said, well, that's true, but only 99% of the time. You know what it is? It's those very rare moments that you can capture, and they're not that rare, actually. Just several moments of bliss that you have with your children, sitting on your lap, maybe watching a television show, or they come up and they ask you a question, and they say thank you, and they give you a hug. That those moments, and they're just moments, but they can carry you through the subsequent hours of whining and sibling fighting and the complaining and anything else that goes on. You kind of hang on to those moments and cherish them, and we sort of block out all of the other stuff, and when we look back at the pictures and the videos, we think that we romanticize about those moments. But, you know, those are the moments that really warm our heart, that help us kind of erase everything else and keep us going.
Very true.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, a ratio of 9 to 1, but it's so worth it, especially, like, you know, when I had those moments with my son. I mean, the whole day fighting with him and trying to discipline him to no avail, and then at the last moment before bed, I see this look in his eye, like he had the spiritual awakening, and that, to me, the whole day that stressed me out was gone. It just dissipated because I thought, wow, I got through to him. I taught him something, and he learned, so that makes it worth it.
People may not realize this. You have 5 children, and all of them are under the age of 10, correct?
Yes.
And now you find time to blog and be very good at it, because you basically write things that you encounter yourself. So tell us a little bit about how did you discover the 7 Universal Pearls of Wisdom?
Well, when I came back to the States and we were starting our lives over, we were like new immigrants coming back to the States to move here. We moved immediately in with my parents, and that was pretty funny. We had to fit 9 of us in a small 3-bedroom townhouse, which I always said should have been a reality show, but we could have made a lot of money from that, the funny things that went on. But when I came back and I started getting us back into society and getting the kids signed up for school, a lot of my friends from here, because I did grow up here in South Florida that I hadn't seen, had said to me, how did you get through all that? Did you develop any nervous tics, or, you know, did you and your husband decide to get divorced at any point? Because that's a lot of pressure on a marriage. And, you know, did you ever consider going on some antidepressant and this and that? And I thought, wow, everyone keeps asking me the same question. Like, they're shocked that I'm standing here, because we went through a lot. And I kind of sat down one day when the little ones were napping, the other ones were at school, and I wrote down exactly what I did, like a recipe, to get through and I tried to really take myself out of the situation and wrote down seven pearls that I call, seven nuggets of wisdom that I unwittingly adapted that helped me get through one tragic event, one obstacle after another, and that I still continue to adapt to get through. And I sort of put the grouping together and the nomenclature that I called it the seven universal pearls of wisdom. Although it's not like I discovered some novel concept, I put them together in a new way that I think would help anybody going through, be it a gambling problem, divorce, loss of income, whatever it is, it can help you kind of toughen out a very challenging situation. And that's
very
how that was born. And it actually helps me because when I feel like I'm falling apart, I say, well, let me make sure I'm following my own advice here and continue on this journey, this warrior journey, because if not,
right,
then I'm a hypocrite.
What are the seven pearls of wisdom?
Well, the seven pearls of wisdom, I can run through each one with you quickly. The
sure.
first one, I call it exodus, and I call it leave your discomfort zone, rupture. In other words, and you could say this would be taken from a 12-step program. If you're hanging around a place or a person that's making you miserable, you're not feeling good about whatever situation you're in, you're living in a neighborhood and you're having problems in the neighborhood, if you can physically leave, leave. Just make peace and get out of whatever situation you're in. And a lot of people that are in bad relationships, they know that the first thing they have to do is just sever ties with the person and everything associated with that person. So I call it leave your discomfort zone, which is basically what I had done every time there was a bad situation. And it's not running away from a situation, but it's recognizing I need to preserve my sanity. I need to preserve, have a good mindset right now because I'm under stress and I need to make decisions, and my decisions have to be based on good, well thought out planning. So I'm going to cut ties with whatever it is that's bringing me down. The second one I call it let go, detach, but don't settle. So let's say one of the things that happened to us was we had an armed robbery. A group of men came into our home and took everything. So we had to decide, are we going to mourn the loss of everything that we lost? We tried to recover some things to no avail. We couldn't. Do you drive yourself crazy and have nightmares and ruminate over it over and over again? Or do you say, okay, lost it. It's gone. Whether it was fire, theft, bad investment, it's ancient history. So now I'm going to focus forward like the horse. I'm going to put on blinders, start from scratch. I don't care if you're 40, 50 years old. You just got to look forward, stay focused, don't settle and say, oh, well, now it doesn't matter. Now I'm not going to try to hit my goals. No. Continue forward, but bury the past, because living in the past is not going to bring anything back, and it's going to bring you down. Now, I know, like, one of those laws is the law of detachment from Deepak Chopra. It's sort of similar to that. But it goes a little farther beyond let go of the past, but still try to recover in a new way, whatever you want in the future. The third one I call support group. And this sounds so obvious, Johnny, but so many people, when they're in a bad spot in life, they sort of detach from everyone that loves them and get into a little cave, and nobody wants to admit, that they're going through a rough time, and kind of like, well, let me bury myself in my home, and I'll call my friend and contact everyone when I'm feeling better and I can be victorious again. No, you need to build that support system. You need to seek people out. No one's going to know what you're going through if you don't tell them. You have to put your pride aside. Sometimes in life you're up, sometimes you're down. It's an unpredictable cycle, but you can't close doors because you need people. You can't do it alone. And you don't have to be afraid to say, look, you know, I lost my job. I need help. You know anyone that's looking to hire? You don't have to have pride. It's not the time. You need to survive. So that's the third one. The fourth one I call healthy body, healthy mind. Now, obviously, you're not going to be wanting to train for the Ironman if you're going through a divorce or you're going through any kind of problem, but you have to recognize that staying healthy, mind, body, and spirit, even minimally healthy, because now is not the time you're going to be able to perhaps go buy your expensive organic food, but you want to do something that's going to get your heart rate up, something that is going to take the stress off of you, and you need to consider yourself a soldier, and you're in training for the battle of your life. You need to be confident, and you need to have the abilities to have clear thinking. So that is so important, to take care of your mind and your body. I've seen people that go through breakups, and they just lay in bed for days and days, and chocolate bars and cigarettes and coffee. That's not going to help you get out of your funk.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's just walking around the block, because you don't mm-hmm. want to go to the gym, you don't want to see anybody, you do that.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth one I call reinvent yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you lost your job, and I say this one a lot because a lot of people are going through it in the recession. You lose your job in IT. You don't know anything else. That's all you've done for 20 years. It's an opportunity to learn something new. Reinvent
mm-hmm.
yourself. Study something online. A lot of times it's free. Take up a dormant passion. Do something that you've always wanted to do, but you never had the courage to do it. So reinventing yourself, you look at people like Madonna. How do you think she stayed on the top of the charts all these years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to just really do something out of your comfort zone, and you would be surprised the results that you can gain. And then six I call stay open and on standby, which I love this one. You have to be ready and alert for whatever novelties appear in your life. You have
mm-hmm.
to not only embrace change, but seek out the element of change, of surprise in your life. Because when you do that and you push your comfort zone, then you can achieve levels of happiness and levels of rewards that exceed anything you could have ever planned for. And the last one I call give back. And this
mm-hmm.
is very important because it's a karmic cycle. You
mm-hmm.
must share your knowledge, if you can share your time, if you can share your wealth, whatever it is, you have to help other people. And you know from suffering yourself, you know that it is so hard to ask for help. So when you see someone that's going through a rough time, don't wait for them to have to ask you. Just be proactive and give them your time, your shoulder, whatever it is, and make that a responsibility of yours to really go out and reach out to others. And those are my seven pearls.
Those are wonderful pearls of wisdom. Where can someone go to learn a little bit more about this? Do you have it posted somewhere?
Yes, I do. I have it. If you go to my blog, which is warriormom.net, I have it. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom right, it's under the category seven Pearls of Wisdom, and it's pretty much outlined there. And I also talk about it a little bit on a YouTube I have posted on the front homepage of my blog.
And that's warriormom.net.
.net, yes. www.warriormom.net.
How can we teach ourselves to get into that mindset, though? Because what you did, you had transformed yourself into the mentality of a warrior. In this case, a warrior mom is a healthy balance between, you know, your personal self, knowing that you have to have the sanity to basically be a wonderful mom, a wonderful wife, and be the leader at home. And then at the same time, address those issues that prevailing within your own family, because I know that personally you have gone through several tragedies among your family besides yourself, like you mentioned earlier, battling cancer and so forth.
Right. And a few days after I had returned home, after the removal of the tumor, I had my youngest brother committed suicide. And like I said, it's a lot that we had been through. And I think that the seven pearls are a hands-on philosophy. You have to adapt a mindset. Like you said, I have convinced myself, whether you want to call it delusional or whatever it is, it's a survival mentality. I consider myself a warrior. Now, I don't walk around in fatigues and paint my face. I mean, I actually look pretty feminine, but but I do consider... Not that life's a battle and I'm battling everybody else, but it's always a fight to to keep ourselves sane, to keep our family united. There's so many negative influences pulling us away from what really matters, whether it's the media or society's obsession for consumerism, whatever it is. I like to evoke the imagination. I do this with my children a lot. You know, when we're kids, we have such a vibrant imagination that's as alive as our real reality. So I tell myself every day, come on, Dara, get up. You know, you're a soldier. This is boot camp. You're training. You know, the pot of gold is on the end of the horizon. I don't know where that is. I've been telling myself that for 3 years, but it's keeping me going.
Yeah.
And whether I'm fooling myself, it doesn't matter, because in the end, even though I fooled myself, I'm leading a happier, healthier life. So the joke's really not on me in the end.
Yeah.
And when I go into a store with my kids and I need them all to be quiet and not touch and break things, I tell them, come on, we're on a recon mission. We're here. We're spies. And we're checking out the competition. Whatever it is, they get into it. They love it. And it keeps, and I achieve the goal of keeping them from damaging everything. So,
leave things like no one know that you were here kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, you have to kind of tell yourself. It's a lot of affirmations. Not so much looking in the mirror and saying, I can, I'm worth it. Not those old affirmations from the 80s.
Right.
But basically, you have to consider yourself a modern-day warrior. You have to have the resolve of a fighter to keep yourself centered and to keep your principles despite what's going on and what's trendy in society.
You have obviously taken that concept of being a mom, leading by example and so forth to a modern-day twist. So where can someone go to read your blog to get more information about you and keep up with your latest happenings? And I know you have written for several other online magazines as well. So tell us, where can our listeners go to get this information from you?
Well, what I do is my blog, warriormom.net, basically I have it as a way to just organize and store all of the articles I've written, even the ones I've written for other publications. So anyone that wants to read anything from me, that's a central warehouse, if you will, for everything that I've ever written. And it'll say, this was also posted here, this was also published here, whether it's on Blogger or whether it's on another site. But I think that's the place that the readers want to go. And I have everything categorized if they want to read about sibling rivalry, if they want to read about balance, if they want to read about, you know, sleeplessness or insomnia or whatever the topic is. In the bottom right-hand corner of the blog, everything's categorized by topic. So I'd say that's the one place that they could go.
Very good. How has writing your blog and articles impacted you personally?
Well, I have to say my family complains a lot because, you know, it's mom taking time for mom. So I've lost a lot of sleep because I've started doing it in the evenings when the kids are already sleeping. But, you know, when you're passionate about something, you don't even notice that you're tired. But it's actually they're proud. When they see my articles published in magazines, they're proud. And the truth is it's affected me personally in the sense that I feel like that photographer that can't look at anything in life unless they have a camera lens in front of them. I have to have at all times a pen and a pad of paper with me. Even as I'm going through an experience, I'm taking notes because it's just, I'm so excited to write about it, because once I write about it, like I told you, I live on these two parallel tracks. Once I write about it, I get it, I can understand it, and then I can share it with others. So it's helped me really gain immediate insight into things that sometimes take people 5-10 years later. Oh, if I would have known when he was asking me that, he really meant this. No, I get this immediate insight because I write about it right away, and I can sort of figure it out. And I got four other kids that I can practice it on.
Right. You can pass it along based on experiences that you have with kid number one that you can apply to kid number two and so forth. So
exactly. Like, okay, I figured out the faith thing. So when the next kid has a, you know, wild temper tantrum, I could use that lesson on him. So
yeah.
It kind of works that way.
What can we expect from you for the second half of this year?
Well, I am beginning in August. I'm going to be beginning a regular column with a local parenting print publication here in South Florida. So I'll be making my debut in that. And I'm probably going to slow down on the writing on the other sites because I can only do so much because I'm working on my memoirs. Mm-hmm. And that's something that takes a lot of focus and a lot of time. And so I'm hoping by the end of this year to start querying the agents to see if I can get any bites out there.
Interesting. And what's the memoir about?
The memoir is called A Lucky Girl, and it basically is talks about the last 5 years of my life, starting with the brain tumor, the suicide of my brother, our armed robbery, and what eventually led us back to the U.S., and how all of these quote-unquote negative adversarial events, through it all, how I still see myself as lucky, and I can tell you why in every single event how things could have been worse, and just kind of showing a little bit about the pearls of wisdom. I write a lot about that. So hopefully empowering other people that are going through their own mess to realize that, look, it could always be worse. It sucks, but it could always be worse, and you got to think about the people that have it worse, so that you could feel gratitude for what you do have.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with all our listeners this morning?
Well, there's a quote by Gandhi that I like to live by, and this kind of keeps me, you know, with that whole warrior spirit, trying to keeps me pumped up. And it goes like this: anyone can give up. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. But to hold it together when everyone else would understand if you fell apart, that's true strength. So those are some words that I live by. That's my recipe. And my own personal recipe is to always be present, appreciate the moments you have with the people you care about, because, and you hear this all the time, it sounds like such a cliche, but in the blink of an eye, your life can change. Mm-hmm. So communicate with others, be open, be authentic, and don't let insecurities get in the way of doing what you want to do in life. Don't let your emotions slow you down or cloud your judgment. Just plow forward through the uncertainty and handle your business. Those are my words.
Fantastic. Those are wonderful information and a wonderful recipe for living. How can you get over the things that you overcame with the tragedy that you went through and being robbed, for example, at home? Those are the kind of things that you went through. How did you overcome all those, and what is the central message for your various blogs that you have written? What would you like to get across to your readers?
That you can thrive in uncertainty. You can thrive in instability. You don't have to have that stable job and the perfect living situation and the perfect predictable marriage in order to be able to thrive. You can get yourself plowing through the uncertainty and just create that balance and that sense of wholeness from within. So that way you're not threatened by change, because life is always throwing circumstances at you that you're not prepared for. So you have to be like the receiver that's waiting to receive the serve. You've been watching Wimbledon. You got to just be on your toes, waiting, right? Because that way you could take advantage of new things, and you never know where that could take you. So don't be clouded by uncertainty.
So your guiding philosophy is?
Just create that stability within. So if you're, you find yourself like a gypsy moving every year because you're getting evicted, you're losing a job, your marriage broke up, you're alcoholic, whatever it is, just create that stability within, so no matter where they throw you, you can pick up the pieces and you can keep going like the Energizer Bunny. You don't have to rely on external drapings of a nice mortgage and a nice neighborhood and a perfect school and this and that to give you the illusion of stability.
Stability comes from within ourselves.
It comes
from
within. Absolutely. We've moved 10 times in the past 8 years. And crazy things have happened, but our central core stability, it comes from the confidence that we try to instill in our children, in ourselves, believing in ourselves, and we don't need all that other stuff to feel stable. The world is a mess. The world is chaotic. There's, you know, crazy things happening every day. You need to create that stability within. So if you can weather the brunt of those storms, and I like to say, be like the palm tree that bends and bends but doesn't break, even in the most devastating storms.
How has your family benefited from your wisdom?
I think my kids are all pretty strong kids. I'd have to say that all of the kids are, and they've been through a lot too. Of course, I filter a lot of the information to them. They don't know details. They don't need to know. But all my kids are pretty self-confident. I mean, even the middle children who should be sort of suffering maybe with some more neuroses according to the books.
Yeah.
But the kids are all very strong, very opinionated, very confident. They make their decisions. I ask them a lot of questions. I ask them for their opinions on things because I want to encourage them to develop their own convictions, their own mindset. So I think all the kids have a little bit of the warrior spirit in them, for sure, which also backlashes sometimes when they're cranky, but but they all have it. They're all very strong kids. They're all leaders. They're not followers, and I like that.
Not all days are up days, though. There are days that are down days as well. So how do you recover from that down days?
Well, I go and I work out like a maniac. If I swim, I'm going to go swim a mile. And by the time I'm done, my body is so tired that my mind is crystal clear, and I'm brand new. So that I really use the exercise a lot to exhaust the body, because when I find that I can exhaust my body, my mind is like, it's like reset, you know, refresh.
Right, right.
And that's how I get through, because I know, okay, I'm going to go pick up the kids, and there was a problem this morning getting out of the house. I'm going to go unwind, de-stress, and then when I pick them up, it's a new situation.
You're totally refreshed because
you basically recharge
yourself before you do something else.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, you have to know yourself, know your body, how it works, take the breaks that you need to take, know when to walk away. I really believe in exercise, Johnny, as a healthy way, especially for moms when they have a lot of stress. Even if you're exhausted and you think all you need to do is sleep, don't. Go take a walk because that recharges you. You could sleep at night, you know, but it's really such a healthy way to get the mind, body, spirit in alignment.
Wonderful. Daryl, what is your website again?
It's www.warriormom.net.
www.warriormom.net.
Yes.
Fantastic. Daryl, thank you so much for the great recipe for living that you had mentioned earlier. And thank you for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be the number one international best-selling author of The Book of Awesome, Neil Pasricha. Neil and I will be discussing about his latest book titled The Book of Even More Awesome. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Dara, thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Wonderful. Thank you and take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.